Hi, my name is Steven.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3Pi² ABA Business Leaders Podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Steven and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3Pi² has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to ABA Business Leaders, brought to you by 3Pi².
You got that down.
I got it down. Well, today we have another guest that we met from the CPABA conference. Today we have with us Martin Myers. Martin, we are so thankful for you to be able to make it today. We had an amazing time meeting you at the conference, and we got to be in a couple of panels alongside of you or moderating with you. So we're so thankful for you taking your time to be with us today. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me, Stephen and April. Yes, we had a great time at the CPABA conference, and there's a few of those panels, and we kind of got to know each other and throw ideas around. But yeah, my name is Martin Myers. I've worked in ABA now for almost 15 years, and been a BCBA for almost 10. But most of my time in the on the BCBA side of things was working in leadership positions. And I worked at, you name it, big box companies for ABA and private equity, to small, tiny little private practices, to mid-sized companies. And presently, I work for Grateful Care ABA. I'm the chief strategy officer, and we're probably what you would consider a mid-sized company. And I just have a lot of fun, you know, exploring the way leadership and management interact with the ABA world. And I think we're on the same page in that regard. But yeah, I have a couple passion projects. I have bxmastery.com. Some people are familiar with this. This is kind of like my site thing. It's a goal library with sequence goals for BCBAs. And I got that up and running a couple of years ago. I also have a weekly blog called Flat Rock Weekly. And that's mostly for BCBAs on the same subject. You know, managing caseloads can be difficult. And so I tend to pass along tidbits, whatever's flowing through my mind that week. We were talking a little bit before the show started on our process for disseminating some of that stuff. But I just have a passion for the leadership and management piece of ABA. And I think it's one of those things we're growing in as a field. And so, pleasure to be here, and looking forward to having some fun.
Awesome. Thanks for being here. Well, this is part of our How Can We Help series. We had a series I think we've finished up at this point, I Hate My Job. And so we did quite a bit of social media research and went down that rabbit hole. I'll be honest, we didn't completely go down the rabbit hole ourselves. We had our virtual assistant do it, because I just couldn't handle all of that negativity. Plus, we wanted someone to come at it with like a neutral perspective and not just pick out the certain types of issues within people not being satisfied with their job, with their, you know, job in the ABA field. It covered, you know, RBTs, BTs, BCBAs. And you know, probably out of all of that, the biggest takeaway from it were techs not feeling supported, not receiving enough supervision, not enough training.
Here's I'm gonna just start it off on a real controversial note. So
right.
there was a post in Facebook today.
Oh, today
that I responded to.
See, there you go. We gotta go with that.
Yep,
like,
yeah, and it was
in the moment stuff.
My techs are not completing their session notes, and so I'm now making it like, this is their idea. I'm now gonna make it so that if they don't complete the session note, then we'll pay them admin time for that session. Now, there were 75, like, there were a lot of people that wanted to talk about this, right? There was, like, 75 comments to that post. And, yes, like, I would urge anyone that's attempting to do that, obviously, get legal help on this. Like, you can't just make a new policy. Hey, I'm paying you less. Ta-da, right? Yeah, like, right. This really has to be thought out. And so I think that kind of, again, like, there are a lot of smaller, mid-sized, even larger companies, and I think, I hope, their intention is well-meaning, right? Mm-hmm. They're thinking, okay, we have a problem here. It's a big problem not filling out your session notes. We need them. BCBAs need them to make sure that the case is going the way that they're intending it to, and that if they need to make changes, then they can understand that based on the session notes. So if you have a week's worth of session notes out, then how do you do that? So I totally get that. But as many times we see this, the intention behind the thing, does it's still, you know, it's not, it leaves BTs. If I were to get that in any job, say, hey, if you don't do it at 100%, I'm gonna pay you less. Like, if I were to get that at any job, I would quit. I would quit. That's just the way it is. I would not feel supported. I would not feel as though I'm a valued employee. I would feel like, well, if I don't do everything right, then I'm not worth what I get paid, because you're paying me less. So just wondering, I'm sure you've seen this many times, right? The session notes, probably the most difficult part of the job. So I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there.
I think it's one of those, dare I say, pervasive issues. Pervasive issues, not getting session notes done, but also maybe being a little bit too retaliatory, you know, if that makes sense, after everything's over with. I think, like, the thing with a situation like this, more often than not, is that expectations weren't set and follow-through probably hadn't started when it was supposed to start. Because I think if you really are serious, like session notes, it could be anything. It could be session notes. It could be showing up to work on time. It could be any of these things. If this is important to you, I think when it comes to a new staff member, you have to start giving feedback almost immediately, right away, never missing a beat, being clear on the fact that, you know, this is an issue of consequence. If you keep doing this thing, there's going to be some kind of administrative ramifications that we have in place, you know, and we have policy for that. And here it is right here. Here's a policy. And we are going to move on those ramifications because you violated this thing. You know, like, that needs to be, first of all, if you're going to be, we'll say, punitive to an extent, or implement any kind of aversive stimulus after something like this happens, you have to be clear about it right up front. Like, and it has to send the message, like, we value this. This is really, really important to us. The other thing is in the training process, it has to be going over and over and over again. And I'm a big antecedent interventions kind of guy. If there's a problem, if there's an issue with session notes, that means this was not communicated right up front so incredibly clearly, you know, in the beginning stages, that your staff member thought this was maybe optional, right? Or it's not that important, right? I can maybe do this session of tomorrow. I can do it at the end of the week. I can do it next week or whatever. You know, and so the first two things that jump out at me is, like, probably not the right antecedent interventions, where it was just clearly communicated that, like, this is important. Like, you got to get this done. Like, don't leave at the end of the day without getting this done. And additionally, you know, if it is important, that's communicated, especially in those first few weeks of a new staff member starting, where, you know, it's like, wow, they're quick about this. It really does matter. Oftentimes when I see that kind of, like, a company deferring to those methods, it comes down to, in a lot of ways, a lack of willingness to actually confront proactively. Like, again, punishment's easier. It's easier to just, like, you know, give somebody some electric shock when they do something wrong than it is, you know, and I'm not suggesting that, I'm not saying that ABA companies do that, than it is to, like, be really clear and very intentional and deliberate in your training process on the things that you value. If conversions are important, it's a thing that, make no mistake, when they get out of their training and after their first few weeks, they know it. And they're like, you know what? I get it. All right. That's the rule. And so, so my initial reaction is like, what are the antecedent interventions? I think we live in a time too, where if we pick up a phone and use any of our apps, there are these guys called user designers, right? UX, whatever. Like, and they're behaviorists. They're just like us. And they are trying to make us, you know, they're trying to get us to engage in the behavior with their app that usually pays them money, right? To an extent. And they're trying to make it as easy as possible. None of us needed a crash course on how to use Uber, really. You know, like you're able to kind of click around the first time you use Uber and then you got it and there's a car that showed up. I am a firm proponent, you know, in these situations, if your staff member is unclear about your session notes, you have to make it as easy as an Uber app for them to know at the beginning stages in the training, like, hey, this is important. This is how you do it. These are the expectations. And here's the line. You cross it. This is what's going to happen. You don't. Okay. You're going to be all right. But yeah, that's my initial reaction, I guess.
Yeah, there was some comments in there. I didn't read all the comments. I just saw it as I was hopping on here, and there was one comment, which this is where I would go with it too, in my opinion, is somebody has a practice management software. I'm not putting the name on here. I'm not advertising unless they sponsor our podcast. They have a practice management that does not allow you to have a second open session note, right? So I think that can be very beneficial, right? It's like, oh, well, I can't go to the next session until this one's done. Now, that also has problems, because if you're filling out your first session note at your second session, we have a problem, right? So this isn't going to be a complete solution, but it may help with that problem. And so, like, I know when we had our practice, my focus on the op side was my primary job. Is to remove barriers from my staff. So that should be almost my entire focus. So how do they do their job? How is it easier for them? How do they do it more effectively so that they stay longer? Our clients are happier, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what I suggested, like figure out what the barriers are to this.
Right. And then
work with your staff and give them ownership over those barriers and how to remove them, obviously with your support. But if you, my idea here is that if you give them more ownership and control, they take more pride in their work. They feel more valued and understood. And as long as you're supporting them to remove those barriers, again, as much as possible, it makes it a little bit easier, I think.
Well, that's like kind of goes along with antecedent strategies. I know that you don't know all the behavior analysts. You know quite a bit, but there are a few that you might not be familiar with. But yeah, like I would love to see the shift of conversation in general in the field to like, okay, let's speak behaviorally about this. What barriers can we remove? What antecedent strategies can help?
Right.
And to increase this
this is a completely different post, but it was about like keeping your staff and someone said, you know, you just need a robust hiring process.
Yeah.
And like my issue with both of these posts, and again, I'm not trying to knock anybody. I get it's hard out there and overwhelming. And like, I've got 150 million things on my list. Do you think that I can also take this on? Yeah. Right. I need a quick fix. This is important. I need it done. So I can understand that side of it too.
Sure.
But at the same time, you all are BCBAs the last time I checked. And like your whole deal is changing behavior. And so like my response is, hey, if you can't put a system in place that helps change your staff's behavior, how would you expect a parent to trust that you can change their child's behavior, right? I don't know.
Honestly, Stephen, I think it speaks to a struggle, a weak point in our field. And it's that I think BCBAs, even in their clinical work, can tend to be very univariate. They're like they treat one variable at a time to an extent, and as opposed to looking at like a system of variables, right? And so I like BST, behavior skills training, is a big, you know, coaching strategy as an ABA practitioner, love it. But I know a lot of BCBAs or a lot of, you know, people in leadership at ABA companies that they just live and die by this. And they almost to the point where they overuse it, where they just like, they get this, this is the variable, like probably there's a RBT lacking a skill. I'm going to use BST and I'm going to use BST. And it gets to the point where it's like BST works really well in the context of a variety of different strategies in an environment that is supportive, for example, in an environment that, again, antecedent intervention sends the message right up front that you're always going to be getting better, in an environment that, you know, implies every day that you're probably going to get feedback, you know, in coaching. BST doesn't just work because it's BST. It has to fit in the context of, there's a lot of things that have to go right beforehand. And so I think even when it comes to sometimes even treating and working with kids, we do, we can be a little bit obtuse to that. We're a little bit, you know, like, this is the strategy that works because here's the research. And it's like, well, again, very controlled environments, we're in a very different environment. And I think, you know, to your point, I think some of the best ABA leaders understand context, understand there's a lot of things that have to go right first before some of these other things, you know, come in.
Right. Right. And I guess that maybe is where values and intention come in, right? And if we don't really have a good understanding, if we're a little uneasy about why in the world we're doing this, like I know in our first couple of years, it was like, oh, let's start a practice, right? Like it seems like it might as well do it, right? And if that's where you're coming from, hey, we're going to wing this, right? Well, maybe you are a little bit unsure of what you're valuing and what your intention is. And that kind of leads to this situation where maybe you're not providing the amount of support that you would like, or you're missing some areas that again you don't intend to, but then
Well, I've said before, we've got the science of ABA down, we don't necessarily have the science of service delivery down, which, you know, you guys are helping out quite a bit with that, and that's because, you know, we kind of are the first generations of ABA practitioners, and ABA company owners are kind of coming towards an end here. Like they've been around, depending on where you're at. I'm in Indiana. It started pretty early in Indiana. And so you've got close to maybe in some extreme cases, 20 years of experience under your belt. So there's a lot of practitioners who now can kind of talk about some of those proactives that you need to have in place, like you guys, like we're okay, we've done this now, and there's some curveballs that you're going to need to hit. Those, you know, 20 years ago, you're building the plane as you're flying it, and you know it's a little bit different.
Yeah,
you know, now hopefully at least.
Hopefully, yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, I know that in one of our sessions, they've all run together at this point, at the conference. There was a discussion about core values, and I believe it was you, correct me if I'm wrong, but that you kind of explained it to looking at the behavior that you don't want to see, right? Mm-hmm. Like sometimes like what, you know, and how that matches. I don't know. Do you know where I'm going with this? Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a couple different kinds of people. There's people that are very much, they're agents. They're like, they're fireballs. They, when it comes to owning an ABA company or whatever, or running an ABA company, they're all over the place. They're running, they're full of energy and everything. Like they're doers in the fullest sense of the word. And I think there's individuals that own companies that are a little more cautious, a little more deliberate, a little bit more sequenced, you know, and whatnot. I don't think there's A or B is better necessarily, but just each comes with its weaknesses. And I think the doer tends to try everything and be okay with trying everything and being okay with failure. The person who's a little more cautious doesn't necessarily always know what to do. And so they consider every variable and they move a little bit slower usually. For the person that's a doer, I always say, go with the thing that's a hell yeah, you know, go with the thing that's like, yes, we're going to do that. If you feel your gut leap and so, you know, and everything like that, you know, if there's an initiative or you have a decision to make, you have a choice to make, go with the heck yeah, go with the thing that's like speaks to you. But if you're a person a little bit more like me, who's a little bit more sequential, a little bit more cautious, look at the stuff you're like, and you don't know yet, you know, you just don't know really what it's going to look like. Look at the stuff that kind of disgusts you. Look at the stuff that, you know, if you're faced with a decision, if one is like, that makes me feel gross, you know, then don't do that. There's something there. And I think, you know, when it comes to managing a team or managing one's own ABA company, I think if you don't know what to do, and it's not always, you know, apparent, what you can do is pay attention to what, you know, what kind of feedback, biofeedback you're getting with on what not to do, like what you definitely don't want to do. And when it comes to selecting your values, it's the same way. Like, there's a lot of ABA companies out there, and I think it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think at some point you need to have a target on who you want to be as a company or who you want to be as an ABA leader or team leader or whatever. But I think there's a few ABA companies out there that started saying, we're just not going to be this.
Right.
And we're just not going to be this over here. We're not going to be a 25K caseload company. Like that, you know, we're not going to demand that our BCBAs bill 50 hours a week, you know. So in the beginning stages, when it's very overwhelming, you know, a helpful exercise is to just be like, you know what, let's write down what we definitely aren't going to do, you know. And you can do that as an individual for individual goals, you know, for yourself as a leader. And you can do it for your company. If you're managing a company, you can be like, you know what, this isn't us, you know. And the more you know about what you're not, that tells you about something about who you are, you know. The more you're like, okay, we're not going to be we're not going to have a 25K caseload for our BCBAs. That tells you that caseloads matter to you, yeah. You know, and that tells you that maybe, so what's the sweet spot? Let's see if we can figure out what that is. You know, is it 5? Is it 10? Whatever. What are you going to offer your BCBAs in terms of caseloads? And then you can, you know, you can build a mission statement out of that. You can build a value statement out of that. Because you know something about yourself and you know something about your cause. You're like, this is where we're going. So the no can lead to the yes. You know, what you aren't can lead to figuring out who you are. And I think that's an important exercise.
Yes, I love that. The hell no versus the hell yes.
Yeah.
I know you're, I was like, I kind of sense that you're like, can I say that or not? But yeah.
Yeah, I switched over to heck after. Let's look at the response, you know. Yeah.
April and I are so honored to have Margin Keeper sponsor this podcast.
Running an ABA business comes with its share of challenges. Managing clients, staff, insurance, the list goes on.
One thing you shouldn't add to your stress, bookkeeping. That's where Margin Keepers comes in.
They're specialists in ABA businesses, which means they understand exactly what we need.
With Margin Keepers handling your finances, you can focus on what really matters, your clients, and your practice's growth.
They're more than just bookkeepers. They're lifesavers in the financial world of ABA.
So for peace of mind and expert financial management,
turn to Margin Keepers. It's a decision that will lift a weight off of your shoulders.
Check out Margin Keepers at www.marginkeepers.com and see how they can help your business thrive.
But I think that I would urge, if there are RBTs or BTs or BCBAs that aren't really in leadership or have no intention of being in leadership, I would suggest that they do that too. I think that, again, after doing this I Hate My Job series, my perspective was very much on leadership. They need to take care of their staff. They need to be responsible for doing ethical things. And then after this 5 or 6 hours of TikToks, like, I was like, okay, hold on a second. There's a piece missing here. BTs also need to know what they don't want. They're not going to do what BCBAs need to know. Hey, I'm not taking a 25 or a 30 caseload. I'm not doing 50 billable hours a week. I am not going to allow my BTs to go 3 months without seeing me, right? Like, I think that it's really important that they know what they're not going to do, so that when they get hired, they don't go down the same, well, the company said we do this, so I guess I do this, right? Like,
Right. Well, and to piggyback off of that, I think my particular company does a really, really good job with this. It's, you know, and I think I would urge BCBAs and RBTs, if asking the question about to like where middle management is in terms of relationships and how they value relationships, like how much time is allocated for that, that BCBA or that clinical director to spend with BCBAs or with RBTs and things like that, as a gauge on some of that. Because what I hear back from a lot of that is, too, is RBTs really do want to have a connection. You know, I stand by this. This is one of my big soapbox things. ABA, people who work in ABA are reinforced by relationships. You don't do what we do and, you know, you'll work with kids in very difficult situations with their very difficult behaviors sometimes. And these are individuals that very easily can see the humanity in just in anybody and come about and come. They're relationally driven. They love people. And I think that if there's anything I've learned in the last 10 years is that, you know, relationships have to be prioritized in ABA companies. And I think RBTs, BCBAs, you know, need to be able to say, you know what? Yeah, it is important for me to know my supervisor, to have touch points with my supervisor, to have a relationship with my supervisor. And companies, I think, that value relationships are quite a bit more successful. And they and put time in the day for the BCBA and the directors to nurture relationship with staff, I think, right, go a long way. Because I think that's a value for a lot of the people in this field. A lot of people who work in human services are that way. You know, relationships are reinforcing. So naturally, the day-to-day has to have some room for that, you know.
Yes. Like my Southern Baptist upbringing just came out. I was like, yes, priest. Because like it's... Yeah, I can't even recap it. Like what you said is perfect. It's beautiful. It's exactly where we feel too. Yeah. You know, like that's where we are. And so many, we've heard this even before our social media deep dive, but so many techs, BCBAs too, are saying, I'm just a warm body.
Yeah.
You know, and that's that, who wants that's to feel horrible. Like that?
What are they telling you? What they're telling you is something punishing to them. They're also telling you what's reinforcing to them, right. You know? And, you know, this can be controversial to an extent, so not to be that way. But, you know, like there is stuff out there that, you know, will say that, you know, ABA has had its critiques in probably the last 5 years, and you've seen them on a national level and everything like that. There's been a lot of presentations I've sat through talking about how we need to be more compassionate and everything like that, which I'm in total agreement. But I want to say this. People that I work with in ABA have been the most compassionate people I've ever worked with, right. You know, because they're relationally driven. Like most people who come and work, you know, teachers, social workers, people who work with people to help people, you know, if you look at the bell curve and everything like that, they're going to be leaning to the right when it comes to compassion. They're going to be leaning to the tails when it comes to compassion and everything like that. And I think it's something as leaders and managers, we have to know that, you know, this is a reinforcer. You know, we got to create the space in the day. We got to create the daylight for those relationships to be nurtured and thrive.
Yeah, I feel like that kind of goes back to what you said at the beginning about like the univariate versus multivariate, like being able to like take the nuance and the context of the situation and like apply it. Because, you know, I think I probably said it myself. I know I've heard other people say, oh, well, send a preference assessment survey out to your staff.
Yeah.
Well, how many swag pins and coffee cards and gas cards? I mean, gas cards could come in handy, but like really like, and there was, and I wish I could remember, it's probably been 7 or 8 years ago that I read an article about, it wasn't in the ABA journal. It was like kind of in a human resources platform. I'm trying to remember exactly, but it was like talking about what motivates staff and like basically reinforces staff. And it was talking about having value, like finding value within their position and that their employer found value within them in their position was higher, more motivating than a raise, especially if it was just like a small raise, right? Nothing mind-blowing, right? Life-changing raise.
Right.
And that kept that, because we were researching, you know, turnover and stuff like that within our company. And that's what that's when we were kind of shifting and like having one-on-one, not one-on-ones like in a just because we have to, like, oh, we got check off getting one, but like really bring open door, like really having open door. Hey, I want to hear about your day. And I think sometimes we get into that like dual relationship ethical, like black and white. And it's like, okay, well, you can be human and stay within the ethics.
Like you can your preference assessment, you said you like coffee. Here is your coffee.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Oh,
wow.
Right?
That's really motivating.
Instead of like really evaluating and observing the behavior and, and just all, like you're talking about here, like all the nuances.
Yeah, I all I was going to say, add into this was like, anyone that goes into this field for more than 3 weeks obviously is very passionate about it, right? Like, this is not an easy job. And I will be the first one to admit, I will never do this job, right? I could never do that. I could not work with kids. I can barely handle the one we got, right? Like, like I couldn't do that all day long forever, right? There's just no. So, like, the people that are doing this job, right, are super passionate. And that's what we saw in those TikToks, right? These, like, there were people in tears, right, saying, I just, I can't find a good company, and I guess I have to leave the field. And, like, those are the people we lose, right? Those are the, by doing what we're doing. And so it's really unfortunate. And, it's just, it has to go beyond that preference. Again, what is the intent? Why are you sending that preference assessment, right? Like, what is that? Well, that's what I'm supposed to do. Well, no, right? Yeah. It's because you want to.
Improve your relationship. It's not even, I you know, people, so many are like, oh, I'm just a billable hour. Or all my admin, all my owners, all my supervisors care billable hours. And so we've talked about this quite a few times now in the last few podcasts that we've recorded. But, you know, we do have there. Money is a factor, right? Especially like looking at our reimbursement rates, and you know, I don't know. I guess as if you're a small startup, it's probably even harder to do these non-billable activities. But like, how can we show up in a way where our staff, they don't feel like it's all about billable? I mean, billable hours are important. There's definitely a place there for them. The session notes are important for many reasons, not just to get paid. You know, like how can we give a more like wholesome,
robust,
like
a fulfilling, experience. Well, I mean, and we know it's possible, right? I think every one of us knows a medical professional, whether it's your MD or your dentist or professional of any kind, that you've paid them for their time, you know, and you've sat there and they've, you know, maybe it's your doctor, they've checked you out, you know, nice conversation. You know, you had a plan when you left, but at the same time, you're like, dang, I like that guy, or dang, I like that guy, you know, it's possible. I mean, my family doctor growing up was that way. I was like, I wanted to be like him. I mean, I was like, he was that good, you know, and there's a possibility in that time that we spend, even when we're billing, when we're having these interactions, when we're, you know, a BCBA with an RBT or a center director with a BCBA or, you know, whatever, to enrich every second we're with them, you know, to make it better. I did a, it's interesting to bring it up. It's probably 6 months ago, I did a blog post about, you know, pairing with staff and really specifically address kind of like what you guys are talking about, the very mechanical preference assessment, here's your coffee kind of thing. And how, like, what does it take to get close with the staff member so that, you know, they feel valued and they feel close to the organization? Because in a lot of ways, you know, a BCBA is paired with an organization, especially in those first 3 months. They're not paired as a BCBA. They represent whatever company they're working with. And that RBT is still getting used to working there and everything like that. And things are kind of unknown. And one of the things I think is important, and whether we like it or not, if we're a BCBA or a center director, we will never be more reinforcing than most of the stuff they already have in their life. Because they've got hopefully parents, or maybe a spouse, a dog, kids, things like that. Those are their reinforcers. And to your point, Stephen, they are the very intrinsic reinforcement of just doing a job, having a purpose, you know, seeing improvement in the kids they work with. You know, a BCBA or a center director is, you know, not going to be able to outmatch that reinforcement. We have to be frank about it. But what they can do is pair themselves with those reinforcers, you know, and talking about, you know, if you're a BCBA and you have RBTs, especially if you've had these RBTs for a while, you should know who their spouses are. What's their names? Like, how are their kids doing? You know, and we want to be professional, but at the same time, you got to be human. You know, what do they do? You should know where they went to on vacation last, you know, and how it went, you know, and things like that, because you want to take your face and put it next to the things that they most value. And then it's different, right? Then it changes things. It's not this isolated, siloed, that's my BCBA, and this is the brand, and this is the job I do. It's, you know, this is, again, a conglomerate of a context of reinforcement, and they all bounce off of each other, you know? And so, you know, to your point, I think that's really, really important. It's let's not be narcissistic about this too, because I think there's a lot of, you know, I definitely was this way. I'll admit, when I first started as a BCBA, I'm like, I'm going to be the best BCBA for you. And I don't know. I think I came across as like a youth pastor trying to be too cool. You know, like it was like just not natural, and it was really rigid. And, I realized almost immediately, it's like, you know what, they've got things in their life that they really, really, really love, you know, and I want to know more about those things. And I think that helps a lot.
Right.
That's such a great point. I've never thought about it from that perspective, but it really does. I mean, I feel like, I feel like I did a lot of that naturally, but I also like very much connections, like my number one priority in life, right? Sure. We were just talking about it.
You're motivated by that. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like before we hit the record button, I was talking about how I love having guests on the podcast, because it's like, I get that energy from people.
Yeah.
is my poor introverted husband over here. After 15 plus years, though, he's gotten kind of, we have a Friendsgiving get together this weekend.
Got 35 people coming.
Yeah. And this year he's actually like, he's like, I don't know if you're looking forward to it, but you're like, you've accepted it as what it is. You're not dreading it as you have in previous years.
Right.
My anxiety is not at 100 right now. I can still kind of focus and like, you know, you know, and that was going to be kind of my next point, right? There are some people like the doctor that you mentioned, they just have it, right? Like they're just the natural, they just love talking to people. It gives them that energy. And then you have people like me, right? Like I'll leave this podcast and I'll have to like, I'm just going to have to go on Netflix or YouTube and just like check out, right? That's just the way it is. And so for those people that maybe this isn't second nature to them, is there a place that they can go? And I get reading books and watching somebody else do it is only going to take you so far. But is there a first step that someone, maybe they've acknowledged, I'm not treating my staff the way that I would hope to or the way I would like to be treated myself. How do I provide that when I'm a little bit standoffish and I honestly don't care about their wife or their husband? I mean, just being honest, right?
Like, No, I think that's a great question. I honestly think not enough can be said for professional authenticity.
Yeah.
You know, like, because I think in this day and age too, when it comes to social media and things like that, there is a premium on being able to see somebody, meeting somebody and knowing who they are kind of, and, you know, not in a sense that they can be an open book, but maybe again, we're professionals. We need to maintain a sense of professionalism. I think you don't, you know, if you're the introvert, you know, and to be honest with you, I'm the same way. I'm usually tapped out about 11 AM. Like, I get all my meetings done in the morning. Cause after that, it's like, okay. But it's better to be professionally authentic, to be, you know, where you're like, no, this is me, and be consistent, and you know don't feel like you have to, because at that point in time you're going to be acting, and then you come across as inauthentic, and at that point then you're aversive, and then, you know, it's aversive to you and it's aversive to them, and you know, you didn't get into this job to act, you know, you got into it to solve problems and help people. So you know, I don't think, you know, where there is that side of us who are extroverted, maybe, who want to dig deep and know about people's lives and really connect with them. There's also those people that are just themselves. And, you know, I think that in and of itself is a reinforcer, you know. Mm-hmm. Now, again, remaining professional is huge, you know. That doesn't mean you start dropping F-bombs when you feel like it. It's a bad day, right?
Right.
But you're still authentic. You're just who you are and everything like that. And I think even introverts, for the most part, can be polite and can be, you know, and pleasant and things like that. And I would encourage anybody who works as a clinician or in leadership that knows that, like, look, I'm an introvert, to do as best you can what I do, which is to schedule that period of time where there is downtime. The Netflix time that you discuss, you know, is incredibly important. And I think it's one of those things where, excuse me, as my computer about almost dies, I thought they had that plugged in. But, you know, it's one of those things, I think, where you really have to give yourself that time, because you know you got to recharge your batteries. And it's like, you got to guard that time. It's precious.
No, I agree. I think some level of self-awareness is important. Yeah. And knowing what you need to help ground you and to help take care of yourself. And that's what we've done in this series. We've also dedicated some time talking about that, yeah. About like how, you know, that it's actually within the ethical guidelines for us to take care of ourselves, yeah. Right?
Right.
In a sense, right? Yeah. And so what do we need? How can we take care of ourselves? Because, you know, and that cliche is true. You got to put your own oxygen mask on first.
Yeah, and I know, like, not in this space, not in ABA, but some of the best teachers for me were, I would not label them as warm and bubbly, right? Like, I would, right? Like, they were pretty harsh, right? And
it
was hard to get, like, they were very cold and stand up, and it was really hard to get them to open up. And I was just, okay, I'm just here, right? Like, I'm not gonna make this worse for you than it already is, but I am going to get that information that I need, right? And maybe it takes me 6 months, but I'm going to find it, and then we form a different relationship. So, I mean, there is some back and forth here, right? That you got, you know, I say this often to April about, like, our son, like, he's going to have different teachers, right? And they're not all going to be warm and bubbly. And he needs to be able to navigate that space of, like, oh, okay, this is how I get what I need so that we can all be successful. So,
I agree with that. I think even as an RBT, you do have to know you're going to get different personalities in terms of, you know, BCBAs, center directors. Yeah. I think even to that point, it's there's something to be said, because I think, again, values change amongst RBTs too. Because some RBTs are like, look, I want to see progress for this kid really, really, really bad. And they tend to value, I think, that BCBA, like, no, we're going hard. We're going to find a way to get this done. You know, we're gonna figure out a way so this learner, you know, thrives in this environment. And in that regard, that RBT is less worried about you connecting with them, you know.
Right.
You know, and so it depends on, you know, it really does depend on the staff member.
Yeah, 100%. That makes a lot of sense.
I wonder if there's a good way to do that. You know, like we often talk, at least my understanding, we often talk about matching the right tech with the right client, right? So you have some RBTs that they're like, I don't want to work with two-year-olds. I love working with 10, 12-year-olds. Yeah. Well, you know, that's just a different interaction. I don't want to get down on the floor. I want to have more conversation. Where you have those ones that are just, give me the two-year-olds. I love playing on the floor all day long.
Singing wheels on the bus all day.
Is there a way, is there some way that we can do that with Matt? Obviously, if you only have one BCBA, that really makes it difficult. But when you have a team of BCBAs, is there a way that you could pair, you know what I mean?
You know, there's like all of the different, I wonder like how much validity is there with like the different personality questionnaires, or like what is it, the Enneagrams and things like that, right? Like,
Well, you know, the thing is with the personality test, I think they get a bad rep. I think, you know, to an extent they are, you know, I'm in ABA. I know that I'm supposed to say there's going to be some people that maybe this upsets, but to me, a personality inventory is a preference assessment.
Yeah,
it's telling you about what that person is probably going to prefer. You know?
It gives you information.
It does. Yeah. There's data there, you know, and it's like, And so, you know, to that point, now some people don't know themselves. Sometimes they can fudge on the answers. You know, a great many of them, especially if they're trying to get a job, aren't going to give you, they're trying to give you what they think you want. But they get a bad rep. But I think from my standpoint, they can tell you about somebody's reinforcers. And I mean, and BCBAs can tell you about their reinforcers too, right? And if it is like, I just want to see progress and I love the science, maybe that's the BCBA that you pair with the RBT that values that same thing. Mm-hmm. With the kiddos that really, really need, you know, we need to see progress with, maybe they have very nuanced, you know, behavior or you know, that we need to work with. And so like, you can kind of work that out just a little bit more. So I'm not against it. I don't have an absolute answer on that. You know, it's kind of hard, but I, you know, I think a personality inventory could be useful.
Yeah, definitely. I like the idea too of like, you know, of course, in a perfect world, right? We could sit down and really pair the perfect matches. And then sometimes, like you were talking about our son, you just have to learn the skill to be able to get along with people that...
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the same with me, right? Your... Like, I'm super, like, introvert. And over the last 5 years, I've had to... I could have just been this person that had a website and did certain things. But it was my goal, it was my value that I want to be out there. I want to be... more the face of this company and show the passion that I have. It's important to me. So I, while yes, I am an introvert, I was like, okay, I'm going to take steps forward to change that up and be okay. Right. And so I remember the first class that I did, it was a billing company and they were on, it was about HIPAA compliance and something went wrong right at the start. Right. And it was, and then I just froze and I was like, oh my God, like, why am I doing this? Right. And I just wanted to just hit the end, just hit
and
the
you had
end,
like right? an audience, the, a live audience.
And so I was like, okay, no, I'm going to settle down. And then I took a couple breaths and I moved forward. Right. And so, hey,
now you have a podcast. Yeah,
now I have a podcast. So you can learn these skills, right? You may not be the bubbliest person in the world, but there. And I like that you, like you said, be your authentic self. Because if you're not fooling anybody, right? Most of the time, you're not going to fool anybody, at least. So.
Yeah, when I was trying to, like, you know, wear my ABA hat during parenting, which, you know, that's a whole struggle in itself sometimes. I don't know, Willis was 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I was trying to like react neutrally and not like show reaction. And inside I was boiling hot, right? Like I was furious or frustrated or overtired or whatever. And so, but I tried to like, I guess what was like kind of my early day ABA voice, you know, like, and he like freaked out about it. He said, "Mommy, please stop using that creepy voice." And so my fake, inauthentic, like, I'm trying to be calm. Let's put our shoes on.
Yeah, right.
Pick up your shoes. And he was like, no, like that freaked him out. And he would escalate, right? Because he saw straight through it. Yeah. He was like,
right.
This is not match.
Yeah. This is just weird. You know, like that's a, you know, I know exactly what you mean. And I know exactly what you mean by ABA, trying to ABA your own kids. Entirely different story.
Yeah, totally. We need a whole podcast on that. That's right. There might be a place for that. We're going to have some resources for parents in 2025 and some training resources and maybe a spinoff podcast in and I really feel like that could be a really way that we could show up for parents is like as BCBAs, right? Or people in the ABA field that are parents and like be a little authentic with each other, right? Of how hard it really is, right? I think that's important.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And just going back to this kind of, you know, having those values and I guess it's part of being authentic too, to be honest. Like, where would you recommend maybe a newer BT or a newer BCBA in this field? Where should they go or, you know, how would they go about setting that line in the sand or setting that, you know, I will not go past this. This is what I'm looking for. And I won't accept, you know, not seeing my staff for 3 months. I won't accept 50 billable hours a week, right? Like how do you, where would you go with that? Or how do you start that?
Well, I think in general, and I think this goes along with being a professional, to kind of rewind, this is gonna be a long answer, but professionalism, really what it means is the ability to scale yourself. And so that means, again, personal growth, things like that. And I think if you are going to embark on a journey of professionalism, you know, which is what an individual, whether they're an RBT, a BCBA, a director, whatever, is doing, there kind of has to be this attitude of self-inquisition, sort of this idea of like figuring yourself out. I mean, and we all know it, you know, anybody who's been through their teens and 20s knows, you know, that's what that's for. And a lot of our RBTs are actually in that age group to an extent, right, where, you know, you're looking to figure yourself out. So I think the first step is like, you know, like even if you're an ABA leader, encouraging that among your people, you know, that, you know, life is not something to be lived. It's a truth to be discerned. And, you know, and yourself is, that's what yourself is. It's that you're finding out about it, you know, but a very practical way I think you do that is you go to the people that are closest to you, you know, and you say, listen, what do you think matters to me? You know, what do you think? And what do you think my strengths are? What do you think my weaknesses are? If you're going to upset me, how would you upset me? You know, if you're going to make me happy, how would you make me happy? You know, give me some examples. And they'll tell you, especially if you have a good relationship with them, you know. And if they're afraid to tell you, that tells you something.
Sure.
You know, because maybe they're like, we got to give them the right answer. You know, maybe you have an anger problem. But it's one of those things where, you know, it's a very practical way is to go to the people that know you. Go to your reinforcers. Go to the people that matter and the people that spend the most time with you and the people that are going to give you the cleanest, honest answer and say, hey, you know, what matters to me? What would make me happy? How would you make me mad? How would you make me sad? How would you break my heart? You're going to find out some things about you. And then you take that and use it as a stencil, you know, for how you're going to go maybe look for a job in ABA or anywhere for that matter. Because maybe ABA, after it's all over with, you find out maybe that's not the right spot for you.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
What a great answer.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much. This is such a great conversation. I'm really enjoying this. Is there anything that we could obviously talk for hours, but is there anything as we wrap up that you were hoping that we would be able, that we would touch on that we haven't hit yet?
No, I mean, I just want to say, you know, I think I have a few messages I like.
Gotcha.
I would say maybe a couple that stand out to me, you know, right off the bat. You know, the first is, you know, I love what you guys are doing. The reason I love what you're doing is you're really introducing this idea that, you know, and this is one of my messages, there's a management side to ABA, especially for BCBAs and directors. You know, as much as BCBAs, you know, might not be prepared for it, I think they're woefully underprepared for it. I'm included in that, you know, to manage a caseload and to manage a series of personalities, working with those kiddos and things like that. You know, very much so the BCBA position is a management position. And like I said, to start the podcast, the science, we kind of have the science of human behavior, you know, we're rolling with that. But the science of, you know, ABA service delivery is still very much a developing and delicate. It's kind of it's like in that teenage stage of like 14 years old, right? Developing awkwardly, we're figuring things out. And I so much appreciate what you guys do because you're bridging that gap. But I think it's something we have to be aware of. I think that we are not good leaders and good managers because we're behavior analysts, you know. And I'll be the first to admit, I more and more put a large premium on a BCBA's professional abilities, a BCBA's abilities to manage time. I always call it the trifecta: manage documents, manage time, and manage relationships. And, you know, that triangle of things is so very, very important. So I love what you guys are doing because it really draws that professionalism piece, that leadership, that management piece. And for me, it's, you know, kind of creating this movement and to as best we can strengthen our BCBAs, specifically in being able to take on this diverse set of personalities and challenges and things like that. So that's, you know, I think that's one of the first things, you know, and the thing I think you guys are doing a great job with. And I mean, that's basically it. That's my message.
Yeah, for sure. I remember at some point, it might have been when we were talking to Martin in our first introduction to him, but you said that you never even thought about
Oh, yeah, that BCBAs.
BCBA, like, you were thinking business owner level and stuff like that, but, like, really, truly, where a BCBA is in that management supervisory position.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me, and, yeah, coming out of that, that was probably the biggest thing I took out of it, was that, wow, you're right. Like, some BCBAs don't want to be supervisors. And
they don't, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And like, I had never thought about it, ever. It was obvious. That was their job. And now looking back at it, like, again, working with engineers for years, there were some engineers that were like, no, I'm not training you. I will not. I'm barely even going to talk to you. I'm going to sit in that corner. I'm going to do my thing, and you're going to leave me alone. And so right. It makes perfect sense that there are going to be some BCBAs that just want to do their thing, but they don't want to have to supervise. And I don't know. It was obvious and shocking at the same time, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're like so many of them, they got started in special education, you know, many of us did. And you go to that. And then you're managing, you know, different staff members, different personalities. And I think, you know, a big thing for me is setting them up for that. If you're going to go into ABA to an extent, depending on where you're at, which company, if you're a BCBA, you're going to end up managing a caseload. You know, and so do we give them the management tools, you know, and, you know, my response to that is like, right now we're not terribly great at it. So,
right.
Yeah, it's basically.
Well, I mean, you take a supervision CEU, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. One every 2 years. Yeah. That should get you through, right?
Yeah, no problem.
Totally.
Yeah.
Anything else from you, sir?
No, I mean, you know, some of this, again, like, it doesn't matter how many CEs you take. It doesn't matter how many books you read and how many classes you take. Some of this stuff, you just got to jump in, right? Head first. And you're going to make some mistakes. You're going to hit some branches on the way down, right? Like, you got to be okay with that.
What is that term? Failability? Is that
failability? Yeah. I don't know I've heard that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
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 Well, I mean, it goes with a lot of, you know, like, relational frame theory or ACT stuff, where you have to have this flexibility, this ability to bounce back when it's full of failure. Like, that's, you know, anything we do is going to be full of failure, right? But you have to have the flexibility to not shatter when things don't go your way. And it's at the beginning, it's trial and error. Even if we built the perfect system and the perfect, you know, center based or home based model, you know, in ABA, there would be these curveballs that we have to hit, and there will be failure. And again, you know, the individuals that do the best with failure too usually do the best, you know, or are much happier, I think, probably in a lot of their positions.
True. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think of a goaltender.
I couldn't, a job I couldn't have, right? For many reasons, because I don't have the skill, I don't have the ability. But like, you let in that first goal, and like, there has to be that just deflated failure feeling.
Absolutely,
and now you've got 55 more minutes to play, right?
And it's like,
how do you shut that off and say, it happened, move forward? And having that makes you. If you have that, you'll be successful. If you don't, you're going to fail.
Well,
right?
Still being able to reflect on what it is that you could try to do differently next time.
You realize, I'll reflect on this in 55 minutes.
But not in
this
moment.
Right.
I'm not going to get stuck in it right now. We're humans working with humans, providing services for humans. I mean,
there's no such thing as a perfect graph. Like, I mean, if we're going from like this, it always goes like this. And never, even if we're moving in the right direction, trending in the positive direction, trending to where we need to be, it can't absolutely there. I have never seen a graph that goes like this unless there's like two data points. But again, you have to have three. But, you know, like, it's gotta be that way. And we have to be willing to manage. I mean, the other thing too, I think, is important to remember if you're a BCBA, is you're not going to go to work every day inspired. You're inspired. I mean, ABA found me, I always say, and I found it was perfect. It came to me at the right time. I was a single guy looking for direction. Boom, there it was. Got into it. I spent the first few years in it completely inspired, eating up the entire science and everything like that. But I can tell you, not every day in any job is going to be perfect inspiration, perfect motivation. There are going to be those days where you're going to be an A+ student. You feel like you're on the ball. And there's going to be a day where you're going to C-, you know, and you're like, I could have done a little bit better. And it's knowing, you know, that you're going to fail and kind of being okay with it and being close to your supervisors too and letting them know and be like, that goes a long way as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I think we accept that of the kids that, oh, well, I shouldn't say we. I think that you all accept that of the kids that you work with. And so maybe you should be a little bit more accepting of that of yourselves. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so.
Yeah. For sure.
Well, Martin, thank you so much for being here today. It's been a great conversation. We will post in the show notes where you can find more about Martin and what he does. And...
Yeah. Do you want to just share a little bit about BX Mastery?
Yeah.
So on the note of you know, BCBAs trying to tackle all the nuances of the job, you know, I basically have put together, based on a concept called component composite analysis, a sequence of goals. And this is a very, this is a passion project. This is something I've always wanted to do and everything like that. So this is like my side thing. But basically it's a goal library. I think we have a little over 4,000 skills right now. And it's kind of takes you from start to finish, from the most, the easiest skills, the most elementary skills, and it takes you through all the phases of teaching, you know, more complex things like maybe toileting, but it starts you through a process, start to finish. And so there's a lot of goal libraries out there. This is the first one, or at least the one I'm aware of, that kind of sequences the goals together and gives you a series of targets that kind of overlap and give you some ideas. It's really built to juice the thinking for BCBAs, because how often I saw it very often. There was BCBAs sitting crisscross applesauce in a playroom in a loud playroom in a center, trying to figure out what the next step is for teaching a skill.
Right.
And it's hard to come up with in a quiet room by yourself at home, let alone in those situations. And so I put together a, this goal library, bxmastery.com. Check it out. It's not even $3 a month. I try to keep it very, very cheap. And again, it's built around those BCBAs who just need a little extra help and a few more ideas.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, we have to collaborate. Yeah, totally. So I would, we'll talk. I think that's really cool. Because that's exactly what we're looking for. So, yeah.
Okay, cool.
All right. Well, thank you so much again. And we look forward to our next time with you.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Stephen and April. See ya.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video, and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3pisquare.com.